Welcome to the Protectors Book Club. We are live tonight with Brad Taylor, former Delta Force unit commander. You would think B.C. Sanders would be the Delta Force guy, but he's not. B.C. Sanders is a current law enforcement, working gangs and homicides, so we're going to keep him blacked out tonight, co-hosting. And we have Christopher Strom. Christopher is the author of Brooklyn to Baghdad, former NYPD sergeant, counterintel, all sorts of great stuff. Worked overseas, doing awesome stuff, taking down some bad guys. So, Brad, Chris, BC, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having
Thanks for having me, Jason.
And so, Brad, here we are. We're going to be talking a little bit about Pike Logan, but you know, before we jump into Pike Logan and before we talk about your awesome series of books, there's a lot going on in the world, brother. Yeah. Absolutely a lot. And you're penning op-eds. You're actually, you know, saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to let my voice be heard. And let's hear what's going on with you. And how are you feeling, you know?
Well, it's kind of conflicting emotions. On the one hand, you could kind of see it happening. I mean, you didn't have to be a genius on geostrategic stuff to realize that Afghanistan was going to fall. I was not surprised at how quickly it fell. I was surprised at how many other people were surprised at how quickly it fell, because the Taliban were taking over districts before we even started to pull out. The minute we said we were going to pull out, it started happening. In fact, you were talking about op-eds. I've got an op-ed tomorrow on the date that I think that Afghanistan died, which was June 16th. When the commandos, so they had the commando force, which was initially trained by the CIA and then was taken over by special forces. They're the one force that was a nationwide type thing that didn't have tribal influence, anything like that. And they were doing about 90% of the fighting. And they went in, they would go in, clear out the Taliban, and then the ANA, the Afghan National Army, would come in and just stabilize it after the fact. And they went in and took over. June 16th, they took over kicked the Taliban out of a village. And the ANA refused to come in. They were afraid for the Taliban to do anything. They couldn't get any air support because we'd pulled the maintenance of their aircraft. And we'd also said, we're not going to do any air support anymore. And they captured 22 Afghan commandos. They surrendered and they killed them all in cold blood. It's on video, which was then put on social media. One of the guys there is a very famous guy. He was the son of a general in the ANA. Previous Secretary of Defense. He studied in America. His wife, his fiance, was an American citizen. He was kind of a mixture of Captain America and Saladin to the Afghan people. In America, nobody heard about it. It's just like one more death over there was a big deal. If the Afghan commandos can't even help for support, why should I, as an ANA private, do anything? So when the Taliban comes in, and in any insurgency, the perception is much greater than the moral of Napoleon's thing. The moral is 3-1 for the physical. It's in an insurgency. That's exactly what it is. And we forget our own history of Afghanistan when we took on the Taliban. They collapsed in like 3 days. Well, why are we surprised when that happened the other way? The Afghan people are going to side with a winning side. When you say you're leaving, you're leaving. And when that guy got killed, it was a huge impact. The morale went through the floor. Everybody said they're not even helping out the cream of the crop here. They're certainly not going to help me. And I wasn't really surprised at what happened.
You know, you brought up your first op-ed was Neo. And I didn't know about Neo. You know, I'm just a common grunt type. What is Neo? And why would that be significant when it comes to Afghanistan?
Well, Neo stands for Non-Combatant Evacuation Operation. We actually have manuals on it. I mean, there's whole things written. You're going to do a NEO now. And it's one of the things that the military trains for, especially for the strike forces, 82nd Airborne, that kind of stuff. And I was in one NEO in my entire military career. When Cambodia went to pieces in the late 90s, they said, we got to get the American citizens out. The AMSAT's got to go. And the NEO is basically a forcible entry saying, this country's falling apart. You know, you could pick the country, Bosnia, Rwanda, wherever, Liberia. If a country's going to pieces, the Americans stay there as long as possible. The embassy is going to stay alive as long as it can. But eventually the embassy says, we're pulling the flag down, turning over lead federal agency from the State Department to the Department of Defense. It's now your turn to get everybody out. And we have tons of plans on how to do that. It's not hard to figure out. I mean, I had to figure it out on the ground for Cambodia, but Luckily, there's people in front of me who said, here's how I did it back then. Here's what we did in Liberia. Here's what we did here. Here's what we did there. And you learn the lessons. And I think our biggest problem right now in Afghanistan is we're afraid of the fact that the albatross hanging around our neck is we're leaving Afghanistan as a military force. Therefore, I'm not going to put any military members at risk. If you change the name of Afghanistan to Liberia, we'd be in there right now kicking ass and taking names and getting the AMSETs out. We're not doing that in Afghanistan because we're all like, oh, no, no, we're leaving Afghanistan. I don't want to get into shooting war with the Taliban. You don't have to. We own the monopoly of violence. You just tell them. But we're going to get our citizens out. Sorry about that. No ill will towards you, but I'm going here. I'm going there. I'm going wherever I'm going to go. Collection points. You make evacuation corridors. And it's not just Kabul related. It's countrywide. They're all over the place. I'm going to go to Helmand province. I'm going here. I'm going there. Here's where you need to be. I'm getting these guys out. And as a Taliban, if you want to fight me, then I'll give you a fight and you're going to lose. Absolutely. You'll lose. And the Taliban know that. They know beyond a shadow of a doubt that one entity that can stop what they've done, and that's us. They don't want to pick a fight with us, and we don't want to pick a fight with them. We just want our people out. Why we're sitting at the airport saying, come to me. It's beyond me. We should be driving out to them and saying, here, get in the back of my vehicle. I'll drive you in the airport. And we're not so far.
Yeah. You know, a lot of things, we reinvent the wheel every 20 years. We just keep reinventing it. People throw away these manuals, people throwing away the book on it. It boggles my mind.
Lot of it's not so much reinventing the wheel. It's just, we don't have, for instance, when you're talking about NEOs, there's no such thing as a NEO organization. Nobody sits there and trains for NEO every minute of every day of every life, waiting on Liberia to go to pieces. When Liberia goes to pieces, there's a manual written there. And there's somebody like me when I was a captain in Special Forces who never done a NEO. I'm not reinventing the wheel. I'm learning. I mean, okay, NEO, I can figure it out. Let me do that. But nobody sits there and trains for every contingency there is. You've got to have smart people on the ground who can figure it out. But you can't sit there and say, why don't we know about NEOs? Well, we haven't done one since 97, Bevel Edge in Cambodia. So who in, you know, Southeast Asia, they did one. I helped do it. Now we're going to do one in Kabul. Well, who in Kabul was in Southeast Asia in 97? So it's not fair to say that, you know, reinventing the wheel. It's fair to say that we're not doing a NEO, and there's plenty of manuals to tell you how to do it.
Well, that's what I should say is
that nobody knows how to do it. Well, they don't, because we don't. There's only so many things you can train on.
Well, I should rephrase that and say there's a manual out there somewhere. Somebody has a contingency.
It's actually called Joint Pup NEO.
There you go.
It's not hard to find.
Oh man, it's tough doing a book club with everything going on right now, especially with the veteran community. And how have people reached out to you and said, hey, you know what, how are you dealing with this? Cause you spent such a significant portion of your career, you know, in the fight against terrorism.
Yeah. I've had a lot of friends of mine. Well, obviously I've had a bazillion friends. In fact, some of my friends are there. The guy that's in charge of Kabul Airfield was a troop commander with me. He's now general. The last commanding general of Afghanistan was my boss when he was a major and I was a captain. I grew up with him. There's a lot of people I know that, you know, are cross-talking, but it's not, you know, I'm not going to play the woe is me, I'm a veteran card.
Well, you know, that drives us right back to getting on track with the book club tonight, is a lot of your experience draws into your characters. And Pike Logan is, you know what, someone in your reviewer said grumpy. But, you know, the grumpy veteran, you know what, he's got a different character set. And now we're running back to book one, One Rough Man. And if everybody hasn't read that one, please go out and read it. That was part of our book club's pick this past month to get everybody into the Pike Logan character. Because it really, before Pike Logan, you had a lot of, you know, you had your Vince Flynn's, you had your Baldacci's. But this is really a really good kickoff for the Pike Logan. So let's talk about it. And what was it like getting this character and developing this character based on your background and trying to keep all the super secret spooky stuff that Delta did out of the pages?
Yeah, it was a lot harder to do back then. I've been out of the military for so long now that you know, I can invent something out of whole cloth and, you know, if it's real, it's not my fault. I didn't know about it. So I'm just making it up like regular authors do. Back then there was a lot of stuff that, I mean, I knew what was classified and what wasn't, how I could do things and how I couldn't do things. Even for fiction, I wasn't going to put anything in there to put anybody in harm's way. So I knew a lot of ways that, that believe it or not, most of the research I did at that point, if you want to get around classification problems, first of all, classifications generally got three things. It's either location, the capability, or technology. It's that's basically it. It's not anything more than that. If you keep out of those ways, so I invented the task force itself, was created out of whole cloth, mainly because I didn't want anybody to say I was writing about real units and just changing the name. So anybody who's been in a real special mission unit would read about the task force and go, we got nothing like this. This is crazy talk. So that's the reason I created the task force, was precisely that reason. And then when I started looking at how am I going to do this and how I'm going to do that, a lot of it, the criminals now are much better than our own intelligence agencies. Police officers, we've got police officers on here. I'm sure they're running around with stingrays all over the place, you know, capturing cell phone data and that kind of stuff. But that's kind of old school for what the criminals are doing now. And so when I see a criminal leveraging some kind of asset, for instance, I think it was in, I can't remember which book it was. No Fortunate Son. So they had, I wanted a way to find a phone. Well, I got sick of doing the same old way of finding a phone. And in New York, these guys, when you carry around your cell phone, your smartphone nowadays, when I first started writing, smartphones were kind of new. I mean, there weren't a whole lot of smartphones out there, but now everybody's got one. And you enter your house and it hooks up to the Wi-Fi. Very few people say, ask me every time I'm hooking to Wi-Fi. You just go into a place, and if you've been on that Wi-Fi before, it's going to hook up to the Wi-Fi. And they were smart about it. They built a drone that spoofed a Starbucks Wi-Fi signal from their router. So everybody leaving the Wi-Fi in New York City, everybody left Starbucks, would hit this street corner, they'd hover the drone over it, and out of the 15 people sitting there waiting across the street, five of them had been in that Starbucks. It hooked up to the drone because it thought it was in Starbucks, and they drained all the data from the phone. And that's from a crook. And I read that, and I'm like, yeah, I could use that. That's easy. The cycle of used to be, you know, back in the day, Q, you know, the Department of Science and Technology at CIA, the Q, you know, they're the guys that had all the high speed stuff. Now it's all commercial off the shelf. They can't keep up.
Yeah, I can't imagine going back and working dope like I used to underwater with the technology now. Because back then it was like flip phones, push talk, pagers. Right. And like you said, you know, when the book came out, you know, it was modern for its time. But each novel has progressed since then. One thing I'd like about The One Rough Man is it kind of like has this Indiana Jones feel about it. Whenever you throw archaeology into anything, Jennifer Cahill, yeah. What was it like? Where did that character come from? We always hear about Pike Rose and the Delta.
I just wanted to write. It was just a bucket list thing. I was going to write a book. And I always liked the Indiana Jones stuff. It's funny you mentioned that because that was kind of like my thing. In fact, I was going to be an archaeology major in college and decided to go in the Army. So then I just took the path of least resistance. What's the class that requires the least amount of credits? Because all the Army wanted was a degree. And so that's what I did. But I've always been interested in history. I've always been interested in archaeology. I've always been interested in all that kind of stuff. And I just wanted to write a book that I would enjoy. That's what I was setting out to write. What would I like to read? And everybody was talking about, you know, write what you know. And, I was counter-terrorist guy. So that's what Pike became. But if I'd have been a police officer, Pike had been a cop. If I'd have been a priest, Jennifer would have been a nun. It just ended up being what it was because that's what I was.
The mystery is solved. Now we know where the archaeology, because, you know, the book, as the books go on, you guys are going to different dig sites. You're going here and there, revealing the archaeology, the whole knock, non-official cover of the team is just, I like it. It's cool. And I like that aspect of it about these books. It's like, it's different. You know, usually you'll have like, oh, they're going to come up with like a travel agency or, you know, these task force, super secret people that they never have backstories. They don't have a full real to life undercover crew. And I like,
yeah, that was one of the things. It's, you know, you were talking about classified stuff and it's kind of like, okay, I don't want to really write anything about what we really do. And so when I'm making all this stuff up, I'm like actually saying to myself, you know, this would really work. Maybe I should have done this back when I was in the day, because I've got this whole thing built up, GRS, Grow Your Recovery Services and all that. I'm like, there really is archaeological spots all over the world. You really could get in there and you could really tap into the State Department and all that other stuff.
Oh, and I used to work for an agency called U.S. Customs. And back in the day, one of the groups I was working with was an undercover group, and we had our own trucking company. This is all open source stuff now. It's all in documents and stuff like that. But it's like our own real bona fide trucking company with everything. And I like seeing like Knox and stuff like I like seeing reality in the books. Now with Pike Logan, the guy gets beat up, shot, everything throughout ever. How do you keep a character going like that for so many different iterations?
Yeah, that's probably the hardest thing about writing a series. Well, first of all, I mean, I never thought I'd have a single book published, much less I'm on 16 now, I think. 16 coming out. I lost count. But that's the hardest thing, is because he's got to grow. The human condition, everybody grows. I mean, you go to college and your life changes. You have a baby, your life changes. You get married, your life changes. You go to combat, your life changes. So everybody's got to grow as the series goes along. And it wasn't until I think that book four was in, because I'm not that smart about writing. I hear people talking about, I started writing this book and then I knew at book six I was going to do this. And that's not how I write. I mean, I put 100% in the book I'm writing. And then about book four, I'm kind of like, you know, maybe this is a career. Maybe I should put some thought into this. Where are we going with this? And that's basically when I started really thinking about it. The growth of the first three ended up being kind of a trilogy. I didn't plan it that way. It just ended up being that way. Lucas Cain came back, an enemy of mine. And after that, book four, Widow Strike, I'm like, okay, you got to put some thought into this. You've got to start figuring out where this is going.
On top of the protagonist, which is my favorite word ever, antagonist. You know, we always hear about Pike Logan. We always hear about the different James Reese from Jack Hart, all the other protagonists. But coming up with the villain every time, there always has to be the antagonist. How has that been like with 16 books in?
It's kind of the easier part, to be honest with you. Because as the protagonist, like I just said, Pike Logan's going to continue on. Jennifer Cale's going to continue on. They're both going to grow. They're going to change. They're going to do this or whatever. The antagonist, I can create him out of whole cloth. Actually, I'd kind of think, you know, if I wrote a standalone right now, it'd be super easy because I can make a bad guy out of whole cloth. But the key to a real bad guy is he's got to be a human being. I mean, I've interrogated plenty of terrorists, and you sit across from them and you're like, this guy's making jokes. He seems like a nice guy. Why does he want to kill everybody? There is no such thing as Dr. Evil. They think they're doing the right thing. And you've got to encapsulate that in the book. The reader's got to understand this guy isn't doing this because he's Hannibal Lecter. He's doing this because he really thinks he's doing the right thing. This attack, he's going to perpetuate this thing he's doing. There's a reason he's doing it. And sometimes that reason is shallow, for money. Sometimes it's for emotional reasons. And sometimes it's because he thinks he's doing the greater good. But you've got to let the reader's got to understand this guy's not just Dr. Evil running around. He really believes he's doing the right thing. And sometimes in the books, there's quite a few times, like the Insider Threat was about ISIS. I was writing about ISIS before ISIS even hit the scene. In fact, it almost ruined the book. I was doing two books a year and I had nothing. I hit the end on a book and my publisher said, what's your next book? And I was like, I got nothing. But I'd been doing a lot of security consulting, a lot of contracting, and ISIS was bubbling up. It just hadn't made the news in America. When I said, you know, I got this group called ISIS. They're in Syria right now fighting with Al-Qaeda. Maybe I'll use them. And I did. Well, then they took over Mosul and everything else and created a caliphate. And I was like, holy moly, we're going to wipe them out. It's going to ruin my book. The book's not out. And you're caught in a dilemma. Like, you know, I really want to smash those guys to the ground. But if I do, my book won't be worth anything. Well, it turned out, I told my publisher that, you know, don't worry about it. We're going to sit on our hands. And we did. And it was really a prescient book, which was basically blue passport holders that join ISIS that have no social media presence are the biggest threat we have. There's no, you know, indication these guys are bad. They're blonde haired, blue eyed Americans with a passport. and they were set to kill the Vatican is where they were going. Well, I had to create those guys out of whole cloth and say, okay, what would drive these American kids? They're, you know, they're 19 years old or whatever. What would drive them to do this? And I, by the end of the book, you kind of feel sorry for them. And of course, you know, they all get killed, but it's hard to write that, you know, and make it real. If you don't, they're not Dr. Evil. They got trapped in a bad situation and here they are.
Okay. We got our first question here. Let's talk babies. Will Pike and Jennifer have a baby to give Amina a sibling?
What in the hell? Where'd that come from? Not sure at this point. Hell, they just got married. So the book coming out, they're doing the marriage and the book coming out.
Baby comes next, right? Yeah. Yeah, I really like the idea of the antagonist because you could really do anything you want. They're only going to last a book or two, maybe three.
Yeah, so actually, I've had to, some of them, like the ghost. So an enemy of mine, one of the obvious bad guys, Lucas Kane, and then there's a Palestinian refugee who grew up in a camp in Lebanon, and he's been treated horribly by, you know, just life circumstances, and he's running around whacking people. And I ended up using him in the book. And at the very end of the book, I was kind of like, I kind of like that guy. So I just put him on a shelf. And I created this whole system of called the cloud of where we're storing these. We can't send them to Gitmo anymore. So they're all working. I know some guys, some federal marshals who do marijuana eradication, used to be rangers. And they gave me some insight into where all these little small prisons were. So I picked one of them, made this thing called the cloud. And then three books later, I was like, I was creating something out of whole cloth. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. You got that guy called the ghost sitting in a prison somewhere. You never talked about him again. So I pulled his ass out, started using him.
Well, I know I've been rambling on. So BC or Chris, you guys got any questions?
No, I'm just fascinated with the level of your ability to write nonfiction like that and then still make it seem so realistic. I mean, I'm very simple-minded. I could write about nonfiction all day long, but I can't write fiction. I don't have that kind of a mindset. I mean, you know, we've all seen movies and we've all read books, but for me, I guess that's just not how I'm wired. I got to write something that's nonfiction. But I'm impressed and I'm really enjoying.
Well, I'll tell you, it's kind of the same as writing nonfiction because when it's almost like when I guess my writing career started when you're developing. Exercises for special forces guys, it's got to be believable. You're going to give them an operations order. They all know it's an exercise. I mean, it's not like, you know, Richard Marchenko's book, he jumps out of an airplane, realizes he's got blanks in his weapon. And I'm like, what did somebody load your magazines for you? I mean, right. That's just complete crap. But anyway, so you're going to give these guys something that's realistic. You can't give them something that's just stupid. You know, you can't just say Orange Country and Dr. Evil, here's what we're doing. You know, I mean, you could, but they want to be tested. And so I had to write these huge scripts about why we're going into country X. And we were literally going into a foreign country to do the exercise, depending on where the country was. But you had to, why we're doing this, why are you doing that, and why are you doing this? And then you had to look at what you've developed, knowing you're going to face, you know, 15 guys who are going to question everything you give them. And so then you got to figure out, how can I answer that question? How can I answer this question? How can I answer that question? And writing fiction is kind of the same way, because there's when Pike Logan's doing something, he can do 1,000 different things. He's going to do one thing. Well, you're going to get some reader that wants to know why he didn't do 999 other things. So you've got to answer that question. Why did he not do that? Right. I mean, you see things in real life and sometimes in my own head, I'm just kind of like, I should just be able to do what real life is. Somebody reaches down for their cell phone and gets in a car wreck. Well, if I did that in a novel, the first thing would be like, oh, that's crap. Why would he be reaching for a cell phone? That's so contrived. Well, now I have to create a reason why I need a car wreck here. And there's got to be a reason for it. And I've got to answer the 900 reasons of why he wouldn't do this. And the one reason he did, or you'll get emails. I get emails all the time. I just got one for American Traitor. Why didn't he question this guy? So at the very beginning of American Traitor, Pike doesn't even know anything's going wrong. And he gets accosted by three Chinese guys with pistols. And, of course, him and Jennifer eradicate them all. And by that, I mean they kill him. And the email I get is, why didn't he question that guy? This makes no sense to me. I'm like, you got three guys with pistols and pikes unarmed, he's not going to sit there and say, two guys running around, I'm going to question this one. No, he's just going to eliminate the threat.
Right.
So those kind of things, I'm kind of like, okay, well, I can't answer that. That's what I would do. I'd kill all three of them.
Well, I just want to ask you a follow-up question, if I could, Brad, about how's your relationship with your editor? Like, I'm sure, you know, with all the books that you've written, has it been the same editor pretty much that you know?
No, I've had two now. Okay. I've been really lucky. So I had one. In fact, I was super lucky because the guy that bought One Rough Man was just an editor. By the time I lost him, he became the publisher of one of the top five publishing houses. So kept getting promoted, which was great for me because he's still my editor. And, you know, when he goes into a sales meeting as a low-level editor, they're all competing for who's going to get the money for a book. Well, now he's the publisher. When he goes into a meeting, he's like, yeah, Brad's going to get some money for this book for marketing and things like that. Well, then he eventually got promoted up so high that he's no longer my editor, and now I have a new one.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, everybody asked. I didn't see what it was.
Oh, they were just saying they like the I like more of the uncanny connections between Shoshana and Pike.
Yeah, so that's Vicky. She's actually I kill people in my books because combat is an unrelenting thing, and I killed one of her favorite characters, and she hates my guts now.
Sorry, Vicky.
And that's one of the things actually I wish I hadn't have done because I loved that character. Spent a lot of time on him. And then for that book, it really worked out. But now he's gone.
Gone forever. Maybe in a dream. You know, anybody out there, if you do have a question for Brad, feel free to drop it in the comments and we will ask him. This is a book club, so it's not just like a general interview. So if you do have any questions or comments.
She'll be happy to know that the Shoshana's back in the next book, the one that's coming out in January. And I had to weave in. I mean, one of the hard things was, you know, how do you deal with COVID? Do I want to deal with COVID? I mean, should I just ignore it? And it's been around so long and it was such an impact on my life. I mean, it was no more than anybody else's. I just got stuck in a house forever and I hated every minute of it. So I decided to use it. And one of the things that happened was that the Israelis were so good at vaccination, they're allowed to fly over the world and Americans are not allowed to go anywhere. I just got back from Croatia doing book research, and that's the only country I could get into. I was supposed to go to Croatia for the last book, and I couldn't get in because I'm American. And so Shoshana and Aaron are back, and Pike and Jennifer are flying as Israelis because they can get to every country. And that's how I used COVID.
You know, that's one thing that's going to be after you interlace in all these books now, and it's going to be interesting to see. Now, one thing I like is novellas, these fiction novellas, the small ones.
Yeah.
The short ones, they must be fun to write.
Yeah, they kind of help me finish out what I'm doing with the book. And in fact, we were just talking about Decoys, the guy I killed. I felt so bad about that. I wrote one called The Recruit, which doesn't even have Pike and Jennifer in it. It's Decoy and Knuckles, who are both Navy SEALs, that it's kind of a tribute to him. I felt so bad about killing him that I gave him his own novella. But a lot of it, so the last one I wrote, Exit Fee, like I said, I give 100% to each individual book. And I wrote Daughter of War, which originally in Daughter of War, it was actually called Shadow Strike when it first started out. Amina is a Syrian refugee, and she was going to exit stage left in chapter 4. I didn't know how. Maybe she just ran away. Maybe she got killed. I didn't know. But she's the thread that gets Pike on the threat vector. And that's what was in my head. By chapter 4, I liked her so much. I'm like, nah, I'm going to keep her in the book. By the end of the book, she had taken the whole thing over, which changed the title from Shadow Strike to Daughter of War. That was her, which is one of my best books. I really love that book, except that now when I'm done, she's exists. I mean, I'm starting the next book, and I'm like, what do I do with her? I can't just ignore it. I mean, I created her. Somebody's going to ask, where the hell did Amina go? She was in the last book, and now she's completely disappeared. And so I wrote Exit Fees, a novella, just trying to get my head around that. Okay, what would I do with Amina? How's this going to work out? What am I going to do with this? Now, if this is the Chris Lyons I know, which I might be, I'm not sure. I'm not going to touch Afghanistan. It's going, you know, there's so many different ways that thing could go. That And actually, to be honest, it would just be too painful to write. I'm not doing that. Good book. Decoy's in that one, unfortunately. You're muted, Jason.
BC, what do you got for us, brother?
All right, hopefully my audio is tolerable. So I was curious if you've gotten any feedback or received feedback from younger readers, maybe high school age or middle school, who were influenced by these books the same way our generation may have been by Mack Bolan or some of the other novels like that that we may have read when we were kids. I'm just curious if you ever get feedback from that.
I actually do. Believe it or not, I was a high school interviewee for somebody who was doing this huge project and emailed me out of the blue saying, can I interview you? I'd like to interview you about your books and how you do this and how you do that. It's for an English class. And it was a huge project. I was completely flattered. I was like, yeah, by all means, I'll do that. And then she was completely flattered that I even responded. So I do get emails quite a bit. And a lot of the times the emails are, you know, I'm thinking about going to military type stuff, which are fine. I give them advice. But it's all because they saw the books first and then contacted me.
Very cool. Any questions out there in the audience for Brad Taylor? How many books have you sold so far?
I'm over 3 million now. I don't keep track of it. It's a lot, I guess.
Your fan base is picking up a lot. And I've noticed, like, as soon as I put this out, people are like, oh, you're going to have Brad on? What are you going to talk about? And I'm like, it's Brad Taylor, bro. We're going to talk about Delta Force and Unit. And no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right.
What did you think of the TV show The Unit? There we go. Let's go old school.
It was the dumbest show ever made. I watched the very first one, and I was like, okay, I'm done with this. It was ridiculous.
So what else are we going to talk about tonight? What is next for Pike Logan? What's the next book, and when is it coming out?
It comes out in January, this January, and I gave a little hint to it. So I was doing some research on Israel, believe it or not, and the Temple Mount, which actually is bubbling up right now. The Gaza Strip happened, and I was like, oh, they're going to ruin my book. But luckily, they toned things down. There's a lot of predisposition on the second coming of a Christ, and we need the third temple, and a lot of really hardcore stuff going around the world with that kind of thing, both on, you know, Islam side, on the Christian side, and on the Jewish side. And so I decided to explore that. And it's basically these guys are going nuts. And Aaron and Shoshana, Ramsed is the head of the Mossad. And one of the old Ramseds, which is in one of the previous books, gets killed. I'm giving too much away. He gets killed, and they sent to investigate and find a plot that they're going to solve.
Did you have a cover reveal yet?
We did, actually. Lane, my wife, put it all together. It's got the Maltese cross on it. There was an organization called the Knights of Malta, which I've been waiting to use in a book forever. And I was in the Vatican doing research for the Insider Threat, actually. And there was a organization there called the Knights of Malta. They've been around since the Crusades. They first started out as a hospital during the First Crusade. That's how long they've been around. Most people know the Knights Templars. People understand who they are. Well, they got their ass handed to them by the Pope. You know, they all got strung up and killed, and all their terrain was and gold was given to the Knights of Malta, which still exists to this day. So they have a seat at the UN. They have their own currency. They have their own passports, and they own no terrain. But it's just a really unique organization. So, you know, 6 years ago, I saw them, and I was like, sooner or later, I'm going to put them in a book. And finally, I did.
You know what? Why don't we pull up that? There we go. There it is right there. I like that. That's pretty cool. I think when I actually had that cover for the promo of this. So when is the next book after that? Do you have like a cycle that you do these on?
Where it's I was doing two books a year for a while there. When I first started writing, I was still, you have to feed your kids and put shoes on her feet, and writing was not doing that. And so I was doing a ton of security contracting. And so I would like the book would be due in December, and I'd look at my schedule and be from July until January. I'm going to be out of the house. So I got to turn it in by July, which I would. And then my publisher would do cheetah flips because nobody turns their stuff in early. And I would get mad because I'm like, if something goes wrong in my story, in the real world, I write current events. And the problem with current events is they're current. I mean, at any moment in time, something could go south and the whole book doesn't matter anymore. So I kept beating the drum saying, get my book out, get my book out, get my book out. And they said, well, you know, believe it or not, Brad, you're not the only author we have. And your book wasn't due till December. So we're just going to wait until December to put your book out. And I did that for three books until they said, all right, smart ass, how about Chris Lyon says, might be time for Pike to save Taiwan. You're a book late. American Trader, check it out. It's all about Taiwan. Anyway, they said, let's do two books a year. And so I did. And it just about broke me. I did it for like 4 years. And it's not two books a year. You're editing one book. You're promoting a second book. And you're writing a third book. Oh, and you're also doing the novellas. It was really hard to do. And eventually it was like, me a couple, no mas. I can't do this anymore. And now I'm back to one book a year.
Yeah, I could imagine. You need a break. And you have to do your research, too. It's almost like if you had to do
that's
two
books. That's what I say. I'm doing that. So, you're doing a book tour to promote a book, but I'm also doing the book research trips for, you know, what he just mentioned, you know, Taiwan for American Trader. I traveled all over Australia and all over Taiwan. That takes time to go out there and do. Like I said, I just got back from Croatia. Started out in Zagreb, ended up in Dubrovnik, hit every city in between. So.
Unbelievable. I can't imagine that the pace. It's like, did you really retire? This is kind of like the second coming. This is like a full-time, like, you're like a
real... my wife said during the COVID, when I just laid on the couch all the time, I don't have a place to write. I never had a writing desk. I could write wherever I am. I write in airports. I write in my daughter's volleyball tournaments. I write gymnastic meets, that kind of stuff. And then COVID hit, and I'm like, I got nowhere to write in this entire house. And so I just be on the couch, and she's like, do you do anything? I'm writing a book.
I'm writing, sure. And like, that's just a blank page. That's the writing process for you is obviously you're using a computer. Do you use notes, paper?
I have a journal I keep with me everywhere I go. It's a leather journal. My wife actually bought me, and I jot notes in that. And anything that springs in my head, it comes with me wherever I am. If I'm on the street, well, she calls it my whoopee. So if we're going to dinner, I'm carrying that journal with me because something may happen at dinner where I want to jot something down. But that's basically it. I have a laptop, which I'm talking to you on right now, MacBook. That's what I write on. I don't have I write on MS Word. That's about it.
Any advice for someone that wants to jump into the writing world now? You know, there's a lot of protagonists out there, but how would you design like a unique one?
I don't know. I can't tell anybody how to craft a story. I feel kind of like a fraud myself. I'm amazed how successful I am. I would say my advice would be you'd better like writing. I mean, when I wrote my first book, I thought it was going to sit on the bedside table and my mom would say, that's a really good book, Brad. And that would be the end of that. Nobody's more surprised than I was when it sold. And I had to make a hard choice. I was still in the military. I'd come out on a promotion list for full colonel. I was supposed to go unaccompanied to Southwest Asia for 2 years for counterterrorism stuff. My daughter was entering high school and the book sold. And I had to make a choice. And so I said, well, I'll give writing a try. If I knew how hard it was to get published, I never would have done that. I mean, I'd have been just said, screw that. I'm staying in the Army. I mean, it worked out for me. But if you don't like writing, I would not say if you're saying I'm going to write books because I'm going to make money, you need to write a book because you just want to write a book. And the first thing I would say is write a book. I get asked all the time, hey, I have this great outline for a book or I have a great idea for a book. How do I find an agent? And my answer is, the first step is write the damn book. And after that, then you can start talking about other things.
Chris or BC, you got any questions for Brad?
I was going to ask a question about Pat Conroy. If you read any Pat Conroy or not, since you're in that area. And if you haven't, then disregard the question. You have no clue who I'm talking about, do you?
Actually, Pat Conroy went to this school with my father.
And I know.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. So this is where I always look at current fiction and other works, and reading books like Great Santini and characters like that that people see in everyday life, but could also be, you know, a fighter pilot in the Marine Corps, that sort of thing. Do you think at any point you may shift and start writing books that are maybe not as action-oriented based on some of these characters, or creating characters completely different that operate in different realms as opposed to just military operation?
I have thought about that, and I not so much in the Pat Conroy sense. I mean, most of his stuff was autobiographical. I mean, the Great Santini is his father. The Lords of Discipline is about the Citadel. In fact, he was blackballed from the Citadel forever. And because he wrote that book, and the way to get back in anybody's heart is to give a lot of money. Well, now the new alumni center is called the Pat Conroy Alumni Center. There's a reason for that, because he dumped a ton of money on him, and now he's back in the good graces of the Citadel. If I were going to do something, what I really like to do is write murder mysteries. That's what I read. I don't even read my own genre. I read murder mysteries. John Sanford, Robert Crace. I mean, I got a Michael Connelly book sitting right here that I'm reading right now. I bought in Croatia. So if I was going to do something, I would probably do that. And the only reason I wouldn't is because I can't speak the lingo of a cop. I'm not a cop. I would be reluctant to write about that, even though I love the genre so much.
Yeah. I know a guy who's writing a book right now, very similar to that. But anyway, yeah, I would say take a shot at that, man. I would love to read something you do based outside of the military, just to see. I think you've got a really good perspective just from traveling so much and seeing so many different cultures, that sometimes that shines through. But that's just me. I'm kind of a nerd at heart. But like you said, I'm reading.
The guy who wrote the Afghanistan novels are really, really good novels. Many Splendid Sons, The Kite Runner, those kind of things.
Yes.
Writing about the Taliban experience of these people in Afghanistan. And I was reading his biography. He left Afghanistan in 1976. And I'm like, wow, that guy really captured everything, but he hadn't been there. I mean, the Taliban took over in 96. So he really
captured that. Right. I'm actually reading Kite Runner for like the third time right now. And just for that reason, just because of how he captures history and can portray it in fiction. But it's a phenomenal work. All of his books are.
Well, Brad, we'll give the comment section another run here. Anybody have any questions or comments for Brad? And Chris is going to watch. He said he's going to make sure he jumps in. This line.
I just got a question for you, because this is the second time I've been on the show with Jason. So I'm grateful to be on the show and actually get to speak to you and talk to you, Brad. But do you collaborate with other writers? In other words, do you get involved in a writer's group and just bounce ideas off each other? I mean, you're at a totally different level than myself, obviously. But I was just curious about, like, do you do that as a way of getting creative, or are you just like a lone wolf and you just, you know, hunker down and just start writing?
I'm pretty much a lone wolf. I mean, I have a lot of writing friends, Mark Greene, Don Bentley. They're all friends of mine, and they, Joshua Hood, Matt Bentley, Jack Carr, I know them all. And they, all of them do things differently. Like Don Bentley does, in fact, he converses with all kinds of writing people to bounce ideas off. But I never considered myself a writer. I would have been embarrassed to ask somebody to read my book, except for Army people. So I had all my Army friends reading my book when I was teaching to Citadel. I just said, you know, here, look what I wrote. And so I kind of learned just to write. My instructors were always the authors that I read. I've never had any instruction on how to write, but I've always been a voracious reader. So he was mentioned, The Kite Runner. I've read that. You know, Nelson DeMille, John Corey from Plum Island. There's a lot of Pike right there. I mean, there's all these books that I read that I said, when I set out to write, I'm going to write something I want to read. Well, I know what I like to read, so that's what I set out to write. And I was extremely fortunate. Lightning struck for me to get published. And the publisher actually asked me, you know, at the time, can you write a second one? And I was like, yeah, I think so. Let me give it a shot. And I was on my way. And because I had never started out as a writer, I'd never started out with a writing group where let's exchange chapters and that kind of thing, which a lot of people do, which is nothing wrong with. I just never did it. And so now I would feel like, I mean, I get aggravated when my wife reads something that says, I don't understand what's happening on this assault. I'm like, how could you not understand it? The guy went through door A, hit door B. I mean, it's not that hard to understand. I don't feel comfortable doing that now. I mean, I'm on my way with my career and I write what I want. And I'm going to have an editor tell me anyway. You know, the editor is going to ding my work as it is. So I don't need 14 people dinging it along the way, because half the time you'll correct something and then the editor will say, what'd you put this in here for? Well, he said it was a good idea. So I don't do it. Other people do, though. A lot of my writing friends, that's how they operate. I never thought of myself as a writer. And then when I actually became a writer, I'd already been entrenched in how to write.
And if I could ask one more question, because this is the part I'm most curious about. With all the great books that you've written, have you been approached, or is there something in the works that we might see on the big screen at some point in time? I mean, people love those movies. I've taken my son to every James Bond movie, every Jason Bourne movie, Mission Impossible movies. I mean, I just love being entertained and going to movies like that. And I think most young men love to see stuff like that, you know?
And yeah, Hollywood's a different beast, and I have had a lot of nibbles. I've had a lot of approaches, and I've been reluctant to do it because the lightning's really got to strike for real on that, because when you sell the characters to your book, they own the characters. They can do whatever they want to. Right. And you have to know, are they really going to make a movie? I mean, they may intend to make a movie, but do they ever have the chance of making a movie? And if they do, will it hold true to your character? It's probably more cowardice on my part than anything else, but so far I've said no. And then I see that, Jack Carr's got, Chris Pratt's running around with his guy, Mark Greene's got Ryan Gosling running around with his guy. I'm like, well, maybe I should have said something. But at the end of the day, I'm comfortable writing my books, and it would be great to happen, but I take solace in the fact that, I mean, you mentioned Jason Bourne, Robert Ludlum was dead before that made it to the screen. You mentioned Vince Flynn. He was dead as well before it's made it to the screen. Right. So I take comfort from the fact that, like, okay, if it happens, it happens. That'd be great. But, you know, so far, it has not.
Okay. Well, David Jones says, keep pumping them out. I like that. Keep these books rolling. Eldris, I'm going to read your novels now. I have so many authors to read. Have you read any of the Harry Bosch? I love Harry Bosch books.
I'm reading Harry Bosch right now. Bought him in Croatia.
Michael Connelly's
great.
Love it.
Yeah, I like the foreign books. It's like super thick. And when I bought it, I at first I thought, oh my goodness, this is like a book of short stories or something, because it covers all different and all that. And I just picked up a Michael Connelly book because it was the only English book they had. And I love Michael Connelly. And it turns out it's not. It's a Harry Bosch novel I hadn't read before. And so I'm reading it now.
Tyler asks, is Pike Logan based on anybody real? Does somebody like him exist?
Yeah, Pike Logan definitely exists. He's not me. I get to ask that question all the time. He's definitely not me. But I've served with plenty of Pike Logans, and he is definitely out there. So, you know, sometimes people like send me an email about, you know, that would never happen in the real world. I'm like, well, actually, it kind of did happen in the real world. I was there. So there's definitely Pike Logans in the world, but it's not.
Well, Vicky says, would love the movies, but you have to have Decoy in it. So there we go.
Yeah. Days of Rage, babe. Sorry about that.
Well, Brad, we really appreciate you coming on tonight. And really appreciate everything you're doing. And I like you're speaking up. And thanks for talking in the beginning about Afghanistan and your feelings and your look for your op-ed coming out tomorrow.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You're always welcome on the show. Absolutely. Chris, BC, you got anything?
It was a pleasure, Brad. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it. Jason, thank you very much for inviting me on the show.
Yeah.
Same here, bro. Thank you for your time, man.
And everybody out there at the Protectors Book Club, we are on IG. We have a webpage coming up. We're going to have reviews. We do get a lot of ARCs from publishers. And you know what? The best thing about it, it's free. I will never charge money for anything, for any shows, anything like that. So we take that to the bank. So, yes, Protectors Book Club now on IG webpage. We have awesome author guests like Brad Taylor, Chris Drone. So appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Brad.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me. We'll see you guys later.